We have Dr. Darryl Bullock from the University of Kentucky. We also have Donald Brown from RA Ranch. Donald is a fifth-generation commercial cow-calf producer, seed stock operation from North Central Texas. And then also we have Larry Keenan. Where'd Larry go? Is he here somewhere? Larry, he's in the back. You must be the cleanup guy in the back. But Larry comes to us. He's the director of breed improvements for the Red Angus Association of America, and he's out of South Central Oklahoma. This next talk is the power of economic selection indices to make genetic changes and profitability. And with that, Mr. Brown.
All right. Thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be here, and we're excited to talk about selection index, the power that that has and what it can do. But to do that, let's start by talking about the history of selection and kind of how that's taken place. As we look historically at the selection of cattle, we see a lot of cattle that were selected over time for a specific purpose for which that environment was in need of, be it milk production, meat production, draft ox, color desired, those kind of things. That is really of how a lot of our breeds were started. Now, I've had people ask questions, is that the, what color beast came off the ark? Well, I think Baxter Black says it best. He said, once upon a time, at the start of all creation, angels sat upon a cloud, an odd conglomeration of buckaroos from near and far, but not there from the city. Their job to build a brand new beast. They were the cow committee. Now me, I'd like some floppy ears, suggested Texas Jake. Why, floppy ears would freeze plumb off on the powder or the snake up north. We need some curly hair, said Colorado Bill. Hide that's tight and hair that's thick to ward against the chill. Hold your horses, one and all, said Omaha Eugene. Nebraska needs a fleshy cow, a real corn machine. Why, she'd waste away, cried Tucson Bob. What we need's a hump. One who'll live on tumbleweeds and run from clump to clump. I'd like mine roan, said Shorthorn Mike. No, black, said Angus Tink. White or red, said Hereford Hank. I'd even take them pink. Whatever suits you tickles me, said Juan from Mexico. I second that, said Crossbred Jack. Just make them so they grow. So they made some white, they made some black, they made some orange and spotted. Never made a green one, but they made them tall and squatted in every shape and every size. But one thing they never decided, and that's how to build the perfect cow. On that, they were divided. They still meet from time to time and argue with their leaders. The cow committee carries on. Now we just call them purebred breeders. But as we look at the evolution of selection of cattle, man, have we gained in the tools and the ability to make rapid selection? Because for centuries, we made some selection, but boy, over the last century, we've made a lot. Over the last 30 years, we've made a tremendous amount of progress. My grandparents started weighing the cattle, got a scale. Grandparents on both sides started weighing the cattle, measuring the cattle. Man, that made a difference. And then we started to have scientists compile all that information across a lot of different breeds and put it into breeding values. First sire summary by the American Simmental Association in 1971. You got to get closer? Is that what it is?
I don't know.
I'll get closer yet.
Seemed to work for Todd.
Yeah, I know. Now, with the inclusion of genomics, molecular breeding values, we've enhanced the accuracy of our selection significantly. Now, as we look at traits, we look back here starting in 1972, right? Remember the first Simmental sire summary was in 1971. There was more variance. Todd talked about it in his talk, how there was more variance then than there is today, and that as we look at the slope on yearling weight, we have made a lot of progress through the years.
Donald, go back.
Yep.
I recall Angus is that black line, right?
Correct.
EPDs came around in around 83, 84. We were making good progress before then.
Well, that's true. All right, so Angus, that's right, published, if I remember right, there in the early 80s, their first set of EPDs. And so how is this line ahead of this, before those EPDs? think it's a good point, Darren. And I'm going to go back to Todd's talk where, you know, that was when we were going from this size cattle in the frame race to this size cattle. So it's logical that we increase performance. Now, the question is, did we increase profitability? Did we make the cattle more valuable? Yes, they were bigger, they sold more, but were they more profitable to produce? And with selection index, that's where we want to get to, is talking about that. Good point, Darren. Thank you. As we look at milk trends, again, a lot of disparity early on. We've actually moved towards the middle on that on a lot, and I think that's pretty practical as we look at that. Now, the Angus breed, now we look here. Prior to milk EPD, there was virtually no change in the milk EPD or the milking ability of Angus cattle prior to the release of their EPDs. Now, since then, there's been a tremendous trend for increased productivity. Now, the question is, what's our target? Todd made a good point. We need to have a target to shoot for. What's our target? Is maximum, you know, we're pretty good as seed stock producers. We're pretty good at shooting for the stars. We're pretty good at producing maximums and making that pendulum swing as far as we can make it swing. You know, the question is, how much milk is too much milk? You made the comment, how much marbling is too much marbling? I think this is a bigger question, is how much milk is too much milk when we look at the maintenance of that. Now, I think part of it's relative to your environment, and I think part of it's relative to your personal interest. Now, as we look at other traits here, there we go, birth weights. Now, they grew, so those during that frame race, the growth rate through the 70s increased, and then we saw with the use of the data, breeders able to minimize and actually reduce birth weight on a lot of breeds. Larry Keene presented a lot of this information yesterday from U.S. Meat Animal Research Center and does that on a regular basis here at this program. Here's an interesting chart as we compare this breed, Red Angus cattle. Now, first breed to require mandatory performance testing. 1954, you had to have a birth date and a weaning weight to register Red Angus calf. Now, here, the green line on there is birth weight. EBVs started for Red Angus in 74. We changed over to EPDs, virtually half of an EBV, in the late 70s. Now, let's watch as we look at the growth curve. Again, birth weight, we haven't seen change a lot, holding it pretty steady. Look at the growth. Even though we were measuring weaning weight and some measuring yearling weight, look at what happened through the late 50s and 60s that we were actually decreasing performance even though the weight was required. So were we using the information to get the desired goal of increased productivity? Maybe not. Now, since the EPDs came out and you look at that and we were able to use that information more concise, more usable across breed, and I mean across the entire breed, not just within my herd, then we were able to make better selection. Milk, the yellow line there, again, holding it pretty steady even though we're making genetic change in performance or output.
So Donald, are you suggesting that as seed stock producers or commercial producers that we can make greater genetic progress by using EPDs as opposed to adjusted or actual weights?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about it. I think the data very easily shows that. And the question is, what's the next step that makes us move even faster and more accurately to not only increase output, but to make cattle more valuable and to increase more return? As I look at the evolution of seed stock tools that have been used in our families in this room for decades, you know, that's kind of the evolution we went through. Actual weights, adjusting those weights, and then going to using ratios to compare them within herd, EPDs. Then we started talking about economically relevant traits, the genomically enhanced EPDs, and now with selection index. Now, is that a new thing? No. Gosh, it's been around for decades. But we're starting to really use it, and we want to talk more about that. Because as you look at, all right, here's a slide, and my good friend Jimmy Good's in the room. We talk about, you know, how much information is too much information. There are 148 data points on this particular animal in that cell catalog. I'm going to tell you, Jimmy Good and Two Bar and Mark Gardner, that group have some outstanding cattle. And that data validates that. But as I look at commercial cow-calf producers wanting to buy a bull, sometimes I get data bank overload. And I know a lot of our customers do. So how can, I know they, you know, Jimmy and I talked about this before the program. They print all this because a lot of the seed stock guys want to know all the information. You know, the data I have to select for my, use for, to make my sire, my sale catalogs 300 columns wide. But I want to narrow it down to as little information as I can to create the most relevant description of the genetic merit of the cattle. As I look at it, to me, it's a lot like... As I look at it...
You got it, Donald.
Got it? Okay, it's a lot like our president. He's quite the communicator in a very different platform. And he can do it anytime, anywhere, 140 characters or less. As I look at presenting information, whether it's for me from a bull stud catalog to make decisions, I want a lot of information, but I want the facts and I want the data that's going to help me make the best decisions. As we look at that, here's another sale catalog. And let me go back here just a little bit. One of the interesting things down on the bottom of this one, it has the it's obvious this is the genomically enhanced EPDs. As we look at it, we've got the genomic percentile ranks here. We've got the EPD percentile ranks here. The genomics are already included in here. So why do we confuse the issue when it says this one's in the 18th percentile genomically, the 40th percentile using all the information that's compiled in the EPD? Why do we want to confound the issue there? You can look through a lot of these traits, and they tend to be conflicting here. It's just part of the tools that go into making that information. So instead of creating too much information, why don't we boil it down? This one, there's a star rating down at in the middle there, calving ease, growth, carcass, and maternal. That's using selection index to look at the economically relevant traits. If we look at economically relevant traits, calving ease, growth, carcass, maternal, I'm going to add a fifth one, the efficiency. All right? I think we can boil down all the EPDs we produce into one of those five columns. Now, here on Angus, I'm excited for them to get stability and more reproductive traits and more cost side of the equation traits, because right now we've got the maternal column here blank because I don't have enough information relative to some of the other breeds to make some of those decisions based on cost and reproductive efficiency. So with that, we're going to let...
You're still...
Oh, that's right. Okay, so what is the selection index? Selection index is simply taking the EPDs, multiply them by an economic weighting of how important is that particular trait, adding those together, and that's what gives us the selection index. It is on typically, in most of the EPDs that are presented, it's on a per calf basis. Some of them, like Dollar Profit, are on a per bull productivity basis or 100 calf basis over the lifetime of that bull. All right, here's an example. We want to take 2x calving ease, weaning weight, not quite as much, let's say I'm breeding heifers. I want weaning weight, but I want more emphasis on live calf. And then milk production, I'm going to give a little bit of emphasis to that. And so as we compare two different bulls, here's a set of data, and what does it look like? Well, and then we convert it to economics. All right, as we look at the dollar value to that, that's how those two bulls compare. And that's not always how we would select those bulls if we just looked at the EPDs. All right, why selection indices? Because they're profit motivated. All right, they're based on economics, which is income minus expenses. Man, I tell you what, I think that's important because Todd, you talked a lot about the cow and how we, you know, having that replacement female that fits the environment, a lower cost cow. Larry Keene talked about it yesterday. You know, why don't we work towards cows that fit the environment, lower cost cows, moderate statured cows with high productivity? I think that's probably what we need to maybe look at a little bit more. Smaller female with higher raising higher production. There, this is interesting. Yeah. All right, so it's profit motivated, breeding objectives compatible. So if you're wanting to raise Cavanese cattle, you can do that. Carcass cattle, maternal cattle, growth cattle, combination cattle, your selection index can help you do that. It is multi-trait selection. keeps us away from single trait selection. It's simple. It's easy to use. And that's where I'm going to hand it over to Dare to talk more about the scientific side of why they work and how they work.
Thanks, Dare? Donald. Kind of interesting. Matt Spangler said yesterday that he kind of felt put out because it had been 10 years since he graduated before he got invited back to speak here in Georgia. Well, it took me 25 years. So, Matt, you beat me by 15. But I do appreciate the opportunity. Do they work? You know, that is the ultimate question. We can talk all we want to. And Danielle, I love the fact that you've now included adoption, delta sign, adoption as part of making genetic improvement. And I think that this is the key, wouldn't you say? That we have to have something that works before we need to have adoption, right? And so let's decide if it works. If we do that, let's look at, pulled up the Hereford data and did looked at their genetic trends for their Baldy maternal index. And if you don't know, that index came about in 2005, all right? So prior to 2005, you can do genetic trends even prior to having that trait or index or whatever else, right? You can go back historically and still put those values into the index and look at what trend was happening. And you can see, because of the fact that a lot of the things that are in that index are imported to the Hereford breed, they were making selections on those traits and making progress for what turned out to be that Baldy maternal index, right? We've got a slope increase of 0.15 per year there. But you can see when they implemented that Baldy maternal index, obviously Hereford did a very good job of convincing their producers that it had value. And I think that it's pretty obvious that those breeders have been using selection for that index. And you can see that the rate of improvement increased fairly dramatically. Now, in terms of being fairness and disclosure, I wanted to then take a look at Angus, right? So I did the same thing for Angus, I promise. And we were surprised. All of a sudden, we had, you know, we were making great progress. About $4 a year, a little over, prior to selection indexes. Selection index came about, and all of a sudden we took a little bit of a nosedive, right? And that doesn't make sense to me.
Now, Dara, I believe something fairly significant happened in the Angus breed, somewhere where those blue dots started.
Where the blue dots started and the orange
blue
dots.
Blue dots ended.
Yeah. What was that? What happened in about 2005 in Angus? We had the genetic condition thing hit, and all of a sudden we had a big sell-off, a big purging of some pretty important bulls and cattle from a carcass standpoint, right? And so, and that purge probably took about 5 years. So I broke it down one step further, and it kind of changes things, the perspective just a little bit. If you buy into the fact that that was probably, that purger caused the loss of some really solid genetics for the dollar B index, then you can see that the trend prior to the index coming out was pretty solid. The index came out, and it's not that people weren't using it, I don't think, or that it wasn't effective, but because we were losing some very substantial genetics for that trait that we were selecting for, we had a decrease in improvement, but then really saw a big increase again once everything kind of stabilized and got moving in the right direction again. And I don't find that hard. I think that's a pretty plausible theory for this. I hope you guys will agree. So another test, this was a field test, not a research project, but I tell you, I read through it, and I think it stands pretty solid in terms of what was done from the methods in this test. And what they did was that they took two different groups of cattle, and they looked at the high dollar B group of cattle, and they looked at low dollar B group of cattle. Now, the dollar B values on that group on the left, the high dollar B was around $141, and the right was about $47. And so they took them all the way through the process, the feedlot and carcass, and actual value of these cattle at the backside. And so based on the dollar B values, there should have been a difference in value of just under $200. And then when you see that what they actually got from a difference in value was a little over $200. So it appears to be that using dollar B is a pretty, you can do a pretty good job of predicting some of those economic outcomes.
And Tom Brink will be talking about this project and specifics this afternoon during the breakout session.
Good deal. All right. So I hope that at least gives you a little bit of hope that indexes can work for you. So let's look at what's available. There's three basic types of indexes: the terminal index, weaning replacement index, and the all-purpose index. Now, I know a couple of the breeds have what they call a calving ease index, but really they fit into one of these three as well, so I didn't break those out. All right, with a terminal index, the income is based on carcass merit. That is what the end game is. Donald showed you that profit thing. So that's the income side of it, is based on the carcass merit. And no replacement heifers are going to be, as the definition of terminal is. Okay? No heifers will be retained. Now, if you look at the different different indexes that the different breeds have, and don't worry, if you're alphabetically after G, you're going to come up on the next slide. So when you look at that, though, to me, there's a lot of traits up there, and as Donald said, we're trying to consolidate those into one value, basically, and we've got you include the economically relative traits, or at least the ones that you have EPDs on, right? We can't include traits that we don't have EPDs for. And you can see a few gaps up there. Calving ease direct. Now, you might say, well, that's not very important in a terminal sire, and you might be right there, but there's definitely some differences there. Intake. How important is that, do you think, to a terminal sire selection index? Probably pretty important when you start looking at that cost side of that profit, right? But there's some missing information there, I think. And then post-weaning gain, also pretty substantial in terms of importance, and a few missing ones. All right, so if we move on to the next group of cattle, you see some of those same gaps, I think, in the data. Does that mean that those aren't good indexes? No, and I think we can justify that in a little bit. But does it show that we need to do better in some areas? I think it does show us that. All right. So from a terminal index standpoint, we need to take some caution, because little to no emphasis is placed on calving ease direct. So that might be a trait, particularly if you're going to be breeding some heifers with that bull, that you need to take a close look at least at that index or that EPD within the index to make sure that you're getting enough calving ease direct for your situation. Now, calving ease maternal, of course, is not necessary at all, because you're not keeping back replacements. The other one is intake is a component of many, but not all. And this is an encouragement to the breed associations, and I know you're all working on it, but we really need to make this index as good as possible. We really need to do what we can in that regard.
And, Dare, here's a question that Larry Keene and Mark Tallman brought up in their breakout session yesterday, is they've got a lot of intake data, and should we make that available to the industry to help get some breed different, or help cross-breed comparison relative to intake? If the data's there, should they present it, or should they make it available to the industry?
I think that's a great point, Donald, and I think that for a lot of these traits, intake is a trait that in and of itself is probably a little bit dangerous. Because, yeah, we can breed cattle that have very little intake. But if they have no growth on top of it, we haven't done ourselves any good. So it's the perfect opportunity. I think that's another selling point for selection indexes, is that very point. that we can get that intake data in there and get it balanced properly with the growth side of things to make it the most profitable. All right. There's also a group of the weaning replacement type indexes, and this is where they're targeted on the commercial cow-calf person, primarily, selling their calves at weaning time, and that's where their income stream is going to come from, and they are keeping replacement heifers. So I would say here in Georgia, this might be an index that fits a lot of you in the crowd. That's your typical situation anyway. Now, the first thing that strikes you is, I hate to tell you, there's not a slide two here. There's not very many of these type selection indexes out there. And so to me, that's the first glaring thing here, is that we don't have these indexes kind of across the board with all the breeds. And there might be some solid reasons for that. A couple of things to kind of point out from this group of slides, or this group of indexes. Did you hit it, Donald? Mm-hmm. All right. First of all, not all of them consider calving ease maternal. Keeping back replacement heifers, that's probably pretty important. Would really like to see that EPD included as an economically relevant trait for these indices. Fertility. Once again, yeah, we do have a heifer pregnancy out there, but fertility as a whole and reproduction is still a glaring miss in something where we're going to be keeping back replacement heifers. We all know the economic importance of reproduction. And I know, Donald, I can't remember who it was I was talking with last night, but in my 25-year career, this is probably the biggest disappointment, is the fact that we haven't made any more progress on getting you guys a good reproduction EPD. And I think we still have to strive. I know that that's up there pretty high on the tree of that hanging fruit, but we've got to keep going, because from an economic standpoint, the importance is unbelievable. Maintenance, that's the other thing. So what's the other big side of that cost side? It's how much is that cow consuming over the year? Some people say, well, grass is free. No, it's not. All right? So we really need to get as good a grasp on maintenance as we can as well. All right, so we have the things that we need to be concerned about, I think, when we look at these. We need to always pay attention. I think this is going to be key for any index, because I think that Larry's going to talk about it a little bit later from a threshold trait standpoint. But on a trait like calving ease, we always have to take into consideration what our specific group of females we're going to be breeding that bull to. All right, and so if you're going to be breeding a bunch of heifers, you may have to put a little tougher criteria on calving ease direct than that index places on that particular EPD. All right. Limited information or influence on reproductive performance within these indices, and I think that's, once again, a calling out of we've got to have more work, we've got to do a better job there. And then limited influence of cow maintenance, another call out. We've got to keep trying to do what we can to get a good grip on this. And then also little emphasis on calving ease maternal. For keeping back heifers, it needs to be a part of it. It's hard to convince me that that's not an economically relevant trait in this particular situation. All right. The all-purpose index, and this is where we have a lot of the breeds are offering us the all-purpose index. Income with these all-purpose indexes is carrying it all the way through. So we're taking it all the way through and getting paid on carcass merit. Now, depending on the index, that carcass merit certainly might be different, as it should be. As Todd pointed out, we have different production endpoints, and the different breeds sometimes fit different production systems better. Replacement heifers are retained in this all-purpose index. All right, looking at the breeds, once again, we fill it up pretty good, but there are some things that I think we need to still talk about here. Fertility. Yes, we've done a pretty good job of including the fertility value of some sort into these indices. Now, when you look at the different breeds and the different indexes, there is quite a bit of variation. That's all the way from scrotal circumference, heifer pregnancy, and I can't remember all the others. But we still don't have that solid one, I think, for like lifetime productivity and some things like that. I think stayability gets the closest of what we have. And the breeds that have the stayability, EPD certainly do include it. Feed efficiency. If we're going to be putting them in the feedlot, that's got to be a part of it. There's just the cost associated with the intake or the feed or how efficient our cattle are, I think we would all argue is extremely important. And that line there, that column there, is pretty void of information. And that's mature weight. Once again, kind of getting back to that maintenance side of thing. If we're keeping back replacements, we've got those cows back in the herd, and we need to be getting that included if possible.
There, it's interesting. On this slide, you've got a couple of them down there on the bottom that not everybody might be familiar with.
Yep. Method and also the dollar profit. These are a couple of private industry indices that are out there that and seem to be including quite a bit of the information on those indices. And you can get a lot more information, I think, Donald, in the paper we covered a little bit more. And also, you can get a lot of information on all these indices if you go online, look up the association or those companies, and you can find out kind of what's in there. Now, you're not always going to get kind of what influence is based on those different traits, but you can usually find out at least what traits are in there. All right, so for the all-purpose index, some things to consider. All right. Calving ease emphasis varies greatly. So once again, just pay attention depending on what you're breeding your cattle to. Limited information on feed efficiency and intake. Got to keep working on it. Got to keep working on that cow maintenance issue as well. And then there's varying levels of the reproductive performance. Got to keep working there as well. A lot of these are talking about on the cost side of things. Of course, reproduction is on the income side of things, the more calves we can sell. All right. So keys to successful implementation. We have to have a planned approach once again. The first is there's no use in doing any selection whatsoever, whatever tools we have, if you don't have a roadmap in front of you. Now, that roadmap, what we call it, are breeding objectives, okay? And that's going to be based on what your management is, how you're going to market your cattle in the future, and environment. And I like one of the things that Dr. Thrift said earlier about being adaptable, stay the course, you know, have a plan, try and stay the course. That's not telling you, I mean, particularly with the marketing, that you can't market your cattle differently in a particular year because of a particular situation. A drought and you early wean or don't retain ownership, that is just good common sense. But at least have that game plan in place. Identify selection index that most closely matches your breeding objectives. They do work. We've shown them that. And we're going to show you some more information about how well they work. But you're always better off if you match it as close as possible to what your production system is and your breeding objectives. So to illustrate that, I worked with Steve Miller, and I really appreciate AGI helping me out with this, to come up with some data to kind of illustrate this. Okay, so what Steve did was he took a little over 20,000 bulls that are current sires, and he ran some numbers for me. And so first of all, these are numbers they already have, but we did a correlation between dollar wean and dollar beef. Okay, now if you're not familiar with those indexes, the dollar wean basically includes birth weight, weaning weight, milk, and mature size. Dollar B includes weaning weight, yearling weight, intake, carcass weight, quality, and yield. So quite a bit of difference, right, in the traits that are going in to those two indices. So how do they correlate if you did a correlation between those bulls? Not very well. So if you are a cow-calf producer selling weaned calves and should be using the dollar W index but used the dollar B index, you probably didn't do a very good job of picking the right bull. And you said, but his dollar value is better. Y'all telling me that he has more value. More value in that production system is what we have to remember. Okay? So to illustrate that just a little bit Moore did put together this scatter plot. Okay, that's all the data just plotted. Every dot is a bull, basically. Okay, and so that regression line is just the best fit through that plot. Okay, so that's the indicator of where the breed or this population average, not breed average, this population average is, and it's a little over 40 for dollar W, and a little over, I think that's 90 for dollar B. All right, so I then went and found an outlier bull. And on this slide, I didn't hit the... I get this was like us playing cornhole last night, I guess. I was just a little off. No, when I put this slide together, it was right over that blue dot that's a little to the left of that red circle, okay? I promise you. That's the bull that I could find that was the biggest outlier, okay? So, with that bull, his dollar W value was $2.78. And I looked at the Angus EPD percentile table. He was off the chart on the bottom. Wasn't anywhere close to even making the chart, okay, for dollar W. His dollar beef was $1.72. He was off the chart. So using that bull for the right scenario, he's going to make you a lot of money, right? But if you pick him and use him in the wrong scenario, he's not going to do you very well.
Derek, okay? I want to be the order buyer that buys this guy's calves that have so much profit potential ahead of them, and I don't have to pay him as much for them because the productivity is going to be less at weaning time, and all the upside or the majority of the upside's after they leave the ranch.
Absolutely. You'd make a good order buyer. All right. So then we took it one step further, and I want to qualify what I'm about to show you and that what Steve did. Let's go ahead through it a little bit, Donald. Remember dollar W, that's the same. He put together a special index for me trying to simulate an all-purpose index. It is not an average of dollar W and dollar B, even though that's what it looks like it is. It was more sophisticated than that because of some variance differences and things like that. So don't go and just use a 50-50 and think you have now an all-purpose index, okay? So I just wanted to qualify that. All right, so when we did this correlation, then does it make sense? That correlation got better because we have dollar W in both of them, right? So it's a little bit confounded, but still, we're getting closer to having something that you know, if you use the dollar W and you're actually going to retain ownership, you wouldn't do too bad. You could still probably find a pretty good bull. All right, Don. And so that's how that scatter plot kind of shrinks down when we do this comparison. All right, that's your average again. Still a little over 40, and I think it's a little over 110 is what that is. And so go one more. Okay, the one on the bottom left, that's the original outlier bull. And I'm not going to stay with him because he's not so interesting to me anymore. Now it truly shows he's not a very good bull for either situation here. Now, still a great dollar B bull, but just not if you're going to be keeping back some replacements in this all-purpose one. All right? But now we have a different outlier bull. I found another bull that was kind of out there based on this scenario, okay? And so the dollar W on that new outlier bull was $22, and he was $24 below population average. And for his all-purpose index, he was $22, which was $11 above the population average. So we did one more, had Steve run one more, and this one, dollar W, still the same, but now put a little more emphasis on the pre-weaning side of things, so the dollar W side of things. And we got a much higher correlation, as would be expected. And also, when you look at the scatter plot, you can see it tightens up really close as well. Still looking at the same average, that's still the same outlier bull from the first one. And then my new outlier bull up there, go to the next one, you'll see that he is not very much off target on either side. He is a little bit below average for dollar W, but he's above that population average on the all-purpose index. So you wouldn't do very bad, even if you bought that worst outlier bull, as long as you're getting pretty close on that index. You don't have to be perfect, But as long as you're getting pretty close, you can do a pretty good job. Okay? So keys to successful implementation, as we've already gone through these, okay? And then just be cautious of those traits that are included in the index that don't have economic value. Now, it doesn't mean don't use an index that has a trait that you can't use, but it's just pay attention for it. If it's a really high index, go in and take a look at that trait that does not have economic relevance to you and make sure that that's not the thing that's really pushing that index high. As long as it's within reason, then it's still perfectly fine to use that index. All right, and I think this is where we turn it over to Larry. I hope he didn't leave the room. Larry.
Over here, Darr.
I'm going to give you this, although it doesn't do very much.
Well, it's my pointer to Donald. So as Darr has commented, really I want to focus on identifying the index that most closely resembles your production scenario. And so we want to go through these next several slides looking at, you know, how closely do we have to match that production scenario. And you're going to get to benefit, the producers in the room are going to get to benefit from some of Red Angus's mistakes. You see, Red Angus Association was one of the last breed associations to adopt selection index technology. And the reason that we were so delayed was we were concerned that, you know, we're going to be using one number, one index, to describe several different production scenarios across the entire United States. And we had real concern that wouldn't work. So as we're going to go through some of these slides, I'm going to present some information to you that made us more comfortable that selection index theory certainly does work. And kind of go through some very interesting stuff. So as far as the keys of implementation, the very first one is don't sit on the sidelines. And I encourage you, don't sit on the sidelines with selection indexes. Use them. They are very robust. Even when the economic changes due to market value changes, you know, they're very robust. We're going to go through some of that as well. So, one more time. Go through a couple of the correlations here. The first on the list, okay, so herd builder falls within Darr's category of all-purpose index. So for those who are not familiar with the herd builder index, it assumes the bulls are going to be bred to cows and heifers. So calving ease is important. The heifers are retained from the mating. So fertility, well, those maternal cow-building traits are very important. And all remaining offspring will be sold on a quality-based grid. Okay, so carcass traits are important. Carcass weight, growth in the feed yard, and marbling are very important. So as we started studying the herd builder, that proposed herd builder index, one of the first things we saw was, man, it looks like all these Cavendish bulls really stand out in this index. So are we placing too much emphasis on Cavendish direct? And what we find with the correlation here is if we compare herd builder versus herd builder completely without Cavendish direct, both of those indexes rank the population almost identical. So what does that tell us? That tells us that even if we're going to be using these bulls on cows only, this index is going to do a really good job of identifying bulls that will increase profitability within the operation.
And Larry, you're talking about with correlation, the closer to one, the more perfect the correlation.
Absolutely. The closer the relationship between the two predictions. So as we kind of an interesting thing is if we just take out average daily gain in weaning weight, correlation drops a little bit. If we take out carcass only, so if we're just assuming that, you know, we're gonna do everything the same in the herd builder scenario, except we're gonna sell, you know, not on a grid. Herd builder still does a really good job of ranking animals within our population. Okay, or if we go back there to that kind of sell everything at weaning. So if we just remove from herd builder everything post-weaning, the correlation indicates that we still do a pretty good job of describing these bulls. Okay? So the very last one, if we take out stability from that index, that's where you see the drop. And that's what you would expect. Tom laid it out perfectly this morning. Think back to his slide looking at the economic drivers of reproduction, growth, and carcass. They almost mirror what we see in the correlations here on the slide. So these indexes certainly are robust, even if your production scenario does not perfectly match what these indexes are built with. So Donald and I had a really good time at the 2015 Red Angus Summit. Shortly after indexes were released, we recognized that producers, whenever they go out and look and purchase a new piece of equipment, they don't just look at it and go buy it. They dig into it and see how it works. So we took these producers through a little exercise that we're going to try to summarize quickly. One, looking at, explaining more in detail, still on a generalized basis, how indexes are built. Allow them to build three indexes. And then in the end, we looked at, okay, how different are those three indexes? So through that building, we first identified the economically relevant traits that Dare talked about. And again, this is very general. This is not the BIF recommended way to build an index, okay? This is just a producer exercise that we took this group through. So first, we identified the four major economically relevant traits. And this was kind of an all-purpose index. It's what we were building. And then the very first step is we asked them, okay, on a scale of 0 to 10, how much emphasis do you place on each of those ERTs? Okay, so we had them go through. So in this case, they 7 for cavanese, 2 for growth, 5 for carcass, then 9 for reproduction. Okay, so they were placing a lot of emphasis on reproduction, pretty high emphasis on cavanies direct, balance on growth and carcass. Okay, so then when we develop an index, we identify our ERTs, and then we look to see, okay, what EPDs do we have to predict or to use in those establishment of ERTs? So for cavanies, we allowed them to use either cavanies direct or birth weight. And admittedly, we're at BIF. Yes, we encourage selection to emphasis to be placed on cavanies direct only and not birth weight. But again, this is a producer exercise. Then for growth, we use winning weight and yearling weight. For carcass, the marbling, yield grade, ribeye, and fat. And then reproductions, cavanies maternal, stability, heifer preg, and maintenance energy. So then the next step was, okay, now we have our EPDs identified. How much emphasis do we put on each of those EPDs in predicting or establishing the economically relevant trait? So for cavanies, the very first index that they built was cavanies direct, 7, and then birth weight 3. And we did put the rule that within the ERT, the sum of the numbers must be 10. Okay, so here 7 and 3, 10. So moving on to growth. Okay, so they placed the majority of emphasis on weaning weight. Marbling was pretty much carcass was pretty much kind of a shotgun approach, pretty equivalent across the board. And then reproduction was very much a shotgun approach.
Okay, now, Larry, as we look at this, and I'm looking at the faces in the room, I can see them going, I don't think I'd weight mine that way.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what the producers in the room at the summit. Okay, so we'll go through a couple others. So this very first one, let's go on to the second one. Okay, so this is the next all-purpose index that they built. So as you see here, as compared to the first, very well, I'd call it a well-balanced index. Makes sense. especially for the Red Angus breed. So the second one, they placed a lot of emphasis on reproduction, placed quite a bit of emphasis, more emphasis on calving ease. Donald, this one really looks to me like an index that I'm going to be using to select bulls where I'm going to be keeping a lot of replacement heifers, and I'm going to be selling cattle on a quality-based grid. Okay, so now then, we push them to get very extreme on us to really push, the theory that these indexes work, even when we're, certainly different production systems. So the all-purpose C, the next one, extremely different, okay? Places zero, almost no emphasis on calving ease, still had some reproduction weighting, and they really pushed growth.
So this interesting here, Larry, is how much the emphasis they put on birth weight instead of calving ease, the indicator state trait instead of the economically relevant trait.
That is true. That is exactly right. And they placed the exact emphasis on the two carcass traits. So they exactly swapped them. So this one seems like a very, very much of a terminal, continental type of an index. Okay, so we took them through this. We took them through, and they built these three indexes. And then on the next slide, we'll show some results. So using this, here are 10 fairly heavily used Red Angus bulls that the Red Angus enthusiast would and the audience would recognize. So the percent rank, so the index A percent rank, so that's how those bulls ranked within the population for the index A that they just built. Okay? So we kind of have those big broad range. So then throw up their index B, and what do we see? We see that index B, although it was quite a bit different, it ranked bulls fairly similar. Fairly similar. Now, as we throw a C up there, we'd expected it to be just completely almost opposite, wouldn't we?
Yeah, well, I mean, we had to kind of force the group to say, okay, what would be a strange index? What would be strange economic weightings? What would you not expect?
Mm-hmm.
These results were quite interesting.
They were. We do see some animals really change quite a bit. A bull like B571, very much of a maternal bull, he doesn't do as well on a continental terminal type of an index as you would expect. But overall, I mean, there's still quite a bit of similarity. For the fun of it on this, just for this exercise here, we pulled in the herd builder percent rank within the population. You'll see there is some similarity there, but there's quite a bit of difference. The point I want to make here is this exercise was just a educational, for fun of it, exercise. This is not how we encourage producers to use or develop selection indexes.
Hey, Larry, I just want to point out, because the big factor there is on that profitability thing that we think of with an index, we only had the income side.
We only had the income. We did not have the expense side in this index. And when you throw the expense side in, it certainly changes the rank of bulls. If index development was this quick and this easy, Dr. Mike McNeil probably would have saved thousands of lines of code, thousands of hours perfecting that his methodology for developing selection indexes.
But so it's still interesting to see how closely they do line up all the way across the board.
It is. So those in the audience are probably saying, okay, yeah, those are just 10 bulls you just cherry-picked out. So let's look at it population-wide. Okay, so let's look at correlations again. The correlation on a group of high accuracy, about 1,000 Red Angus bulls, between index A and index B is 0.93. Very high index for two fairly different indexes, or high correlation for two fairly different indexes. Between B and C, those were extremely different indexes, still 0.87. And then between A and C, which probably were the two extremes, 0.65. So what we learned and what those producers walked away with is, one, a better understanding of how indexes are, you know, the theory behind. But we felt more comfortable. They felt more comfortable using indexes after going through this exercise. I wish we had the time to take this group through it. It's really fun to do it yourself, but just with time, we don't have enough time to go through it today. So the, you know, going back to the keys for successful implementation, identify traits that are important economically to your production scenario that are not included in the index, and then tandemly select. So select for the index plus those traits that are not included. So yes, it does require some homework and maybe some phone calls to find out what traits are included in the index. So if traits that are not included, just select them in tandem. Realize that some traits have thresholds or optimums. And a perfect example is Kevinese. And, you know, I think there's probably some ways that no different than the EPDs. EPDs are not perfect, okay? We're going to find ways to make EPDs better. We're going to find ways to make indexes better. This Kevinese theory that's gaining some ground now is one example. And that, do we need to set some thresholds on Kevinese? You know, a bull that is in the top, you know, a bull that's a complete outlier for Kevinese versus one that's in the top 5%, are you really going to see much genetic gain or differences in profitability in the index because of that difference in the Kevinese direct EPD? And here's an example. If we go back to Donald's initial example of an index, if we put a threshold of 10 on Kevinese direct and we don't give this bull any additional benefit from being, you know, 15, so if we just threshold at 10, how does that change it? It changes it quite a bit. Okay, it actually has a re-ranking. Now, this is an extreme example. I mean, if you look at the index, Kevinese is the trait that drives the index. So obviously, if you put a threshold in there, you're going to have some re-ranking. So what does the future hold? I sure hope that we have an increased number of ERTs. I think the very first one that a lot of folks are going after is feed intake predictions, better fertility, better longevity predictions, increased number of selection indexes targeted to specific production systems. I would not be surprised if in the future we may have, you know, some tool that's available that producers can go in and enter their breeding objectives and their production scenario and allow, you know, a very custom index developed for you. Improved genetic valuations due to improved genomic technology. Inclusion of commercial data. We heard this comment several times yesterday about how influential, how beneficial it would be for commercial producers to send data in for us to use in genetic evaluations. Multi-breed indices is something that many people would very much like to see happen. And, you know, while we have an accuracy for each EPD, I'm not aware of a single index that has a printed index that has an accuracy. I think that's going to change in the future.
With that, we're going to wrap it up. And the take-home messages here is that indices are simple. They're the Cliff's Notes version that compile lots of multi-trait data and do it to relative to the production and marketing systems. As we look at indices, it's important that we make sure they're developed correctly. And that as we grow, we need to make sure, do we have the right traits in? Do we have the weightings correct? And have all the information in there that we need? Or do we need to select for or monitor additional traits as they come available? I know another one that Larry Keene was talking about yesterday, disease resistance. We don't have an EPD for disease resistance. Mike McNeil's talked about it. We don't, but boy, talk about something of great value. A lot of traits don't have the feed efficiency index or a EPD yet. Those are things that we need to continue to look at. The other neat thing and a real big take home here is that selection index is very robust. Even if the market signals change significantly, price of corn goes up, price of cattle goes down, variations in that, it's amazing to see how consistent these indexes and how robust they are at selecting the cattle that do more things right. I'm going to say this. I mentioned a while ago in those two examples of the cell catalog extracts that, you know, one was had the genomics, and I'm a huge fan. We genomically test every animal on our place. I'm a huge fan of that. But, man, let's boil that information down into the most valuable of what tells us the most with the least points of information. And as we move forward, I'm going to say this. Selection indices, to me, are the most valuable tool we have to help us make more right decisions and fewer mistakes. Doesn't mean they're perfect. We still need to look at the animal visually, make sure the structure's right, all those things. But we believe they help us make more right decisions than wrong ones. Questions?
All right. We have all our speakers. Dr. Thrift is here. This trio, we're up against the break, but we have time for questions. Anybody have any questions for our speakers for both presentations? If you do, please come up to the microphone so everybody can hear. Any questions?
I guess this question is for Dare. On the chart that you presented with all of the EPDs that were included in some of those indices, is part of the reason that some of those EPDs are missing within those indices because they're not published? And if so, what can the industry do about the lack of those published EPDs for the economically relevant traits?
I think I'm correct in saying this. I don't think it's a matter of them not being published. It's a matter of indicator traits versus the actual ERT. There's a lot of breeds, for most of them, like for intake and things like that, I think that a lot of these breeds do have some process of trying to do it, not through the ERT, but through an indicator trait. And it depended on what information they sent back to me. So in other words, some that were using it as an indicator trait, since it was an indicator trait, not an ERT, they didn't say that they were using it, and I think others did. And so I think with all the indices, there is an effort to try and hit most of those key economic drivers. And so I guess our argument is let's shoot for those ERTs and try and move away from the indicators as much as possible.
And Katie, I'll follow up on that too, in that some breeds just aren't measuring some of those traits. There's some, and I think it's important. And even as we look at genomic data, I'm a huge fan of genomic enhancement. But we've got to continue to get that data, to get those phenotypes. Otherwise, our genetic data is not near as valuable to us. And so I think collecting and reporting that data is more important than ever before.
Other questions?
Good guys, or good job, guys. Thanks. And my question would be, I think everybody's agreed that we've done a great job selecting for output traits. Okay? It's been said. So what was the roadblock for us not to select or not to gather input traits, whether it be reproductive, whether it be cost efficiency and gain? What was the roadblock, and how are we going to overcome that?
I'll start with the roadblock on the easy one, and that's reproduction. The roadblock is it's a lowly heritable trait and hard to get measurements on it, particularly without whole herd recording, without some sort of culling information and all that. And I think we've just lagged behind, some breeds lagging more so than others, I guess. But just lack of information, I think, as much as anything, and the low heritability. Now, we've kind of... We're getting over the hump on the heritability thing in a large part with what genomics is doing for us. That's not going to get us over the hump on the data side of things. Genomics does not replace data, and so we still have to have the data coming all the time. On the intake side of things...
I guess, Craig, and I guess my comment, one of the greatest benefits of having access to commercial producer data is having higher quality data to predict those expense traits. You know, some would argue, and I'd agree, that fertility, reproduction, longevity would be different in a commercial environment as compared to a seed stock operation. So the promise of getting commercial data into each individual breed association database and then further get them into the index calculations will go a great way in better predicting that expense side.
And Craig Hayes, I'd say the other thing is as we look at feed efficiency, you know, but just the cost of collecting that type of information is pretty amazing. Thankfully, there's more and more people collecting that, and I think it's the next great frontier in beef production. But in our team right now with 800 bulls that we're measuring and the replacement females, we collect over 1 billion data points per year measuring feed efficiency. And so thankfully we've got smart guys that can compile all that data and give us concise information to help us make genetic progress. And I'm excited that we're making that progress now on that cost side of the equation. Willie?
This might follow up on Craig's question and cross over to Dr. Stewart, but lowly heritable traits, fertility, feet and legs, I mean, we spend a lot of time, we don't get the data. Maybe we should, breed associations should spend as much time talking about how that could be solved with crossbreeding instead of saying we can't get the data and you don't have the data. It's a lowly heritable trait. Maybe you're wasting your time gathering the data and you maybe ought to talk how it ought to be solved. Breed associations don't do that. Or let's put it this way, some breed associations don't do that.
Todd said that, exactly. Todd said that in that we have to do both.
Yeah, I would concur with exactly what you said on that. I think there's a crossbreed to improve reproduction, longevity, select for growth and carcass, and we can have the best of both worlds.
Absolutely, and I appreciated what Dr. Bruce Golden said yesterday in one of the breakout sessions, and encourage everyone to attend those this afternoon as we dig deeper into the details of the kind of these morning sessions of more broad subjects. But how, with more and more data, even though a lowly heritable trait, reproduction is a lowly heritable trait, we can still make significant genetic progress with higher accuracy predictors. And that's with more data. It's with more information. So, Willie, I applaud that. I long for the day that every cow in my place is a hybrid cow. I long for that day. But today, a customer's willing to pay more for the purebred. So where's the balance between genetic merit and heterosis? And I think I hope sound science says we should see more hybrid seed stock and more hybrid animals in the commercial population. And the neat part is we now have better tools to accurately measure the genetic merit of those animals.
I also think we need to be careful about just quoting heritabilities, because Daniela's formula, it's also the variance. And whilst a trait might be lowly heritable, as Bruce Golden put out yesterday, there can be a lot of genetic variance. And so we just because it's lowly heritable does not mean we don't make genetic improvement. Lowly heritable fitness traits, yes, respond more to hybrid vigour, recovering from inbreeding depression, but just hanging up that we can't make genetic progress because it's got low heritability is not correct. And that shouldn't be a block to collecting that data. So I don't believe that that's the reason why we haven't done reproduction. I think we just haven't done enough work at collecting those traits and then allowing the models to be developed to allow that to happen.
I agree, John. I don't think that's the roadblock for the collecting the data. That's an issue all in of itself. And I do think that it's been the excuse for a long period of time.
And thanks to you and Bruce for helping dispel that myth that I've had in my mind for a long time, that lowly heritable can't make much progress. Reality is we can, but we can best manage what we measure.
All right, we have a break outside with refreshments. First, let's thank our speakers for the first part of our morning session.